Super Scoreboard presents Scotland's Euro Stories with the Scottish Sun.
Hello, I'm Stephen Mill and welcome to Scotland's Euro Stories with the Scottish Sun, a podcast where we look back at the national side's appearances at the Euros, Euro 92, Euro 96 and Euro 2020, obviously. And remember, you can get all the latest news and views on Scotland in the Scottish Sun, as well as all the summer transfer moves and rumours at thescottishsun.co.uk. I am joined by the Scottish Sun's head of sport and super scoreboard extraordinaire when it comes to quizzes and everything else. It's Roger Hannah. How are you doing, Roger?
I'm good, isn't it? This is the first time I've actually listened to what you've been saying at the start of the show, and you've got me worried now, Stephen. I'm listening to when we qualified for Euro 92, then straight away 96. Euro 2020, straight away 2024. Better not be another 24 years before we do it again.
There was a big gap in there. Yeah, that was a really lean period, wasn't it? Yeah, that isn't
not good.
Good at all. I don't think so. I think the squad that we've got coming through. I mean, Ben Doak. I mean, everything's on Ben Doak now. Billy Gilmour's going to be playing for years to come. It'll be fine, I'm sure. So, listen, we're going to look back down memory lane with another very special guest today. And this is a man who's played at three major tournaments for Scotland, including both Euro 92 and Euro 96. 53 caps. He's in the Hall of Fame for Scotland, scoring 9 goals, some very important goals along the way as well. It's former Dundee United, Blackburn and Newcastle United striker Kevin Gallagher. How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm very well, Stephen. Roger, everything's great. Thanks for giving me the bell.
No problem at all. Great for you to join us on the line. So listen, Kevin, we're just going to, as I mentioned, take a wee chat down memory lane. Lots and lots of interesting stories I'm sure you've got in your back pocket about your time playing with Scotland. Let's go all the way back to the start, though. So obviously, in terms of your club career, Dundee United, so successful during the 80s, playing under wee Jim and all the rest of it. Playing in a Scottish Cup final, playing your part in the run to the UEFA Cup final, obviously, as well. And you were just a youngster at that stage. Were you on the Scotland radar when it came to getting called up to the A-team? Obviously, you were in the under-21s. But what was it that you think made you get that call up to the A-team?
No, it was kind of weird. I think managers were scared of my size because I was tiny. I was probably 8 stone wet through when I was in Scotland as a youngster. And I think kind of Andy Roxburgh looked at that and he always said, like, it didn't matter, your skill and that would take you above anything. But I think in deep hindsight, he'd have preferred me to be about 3 or 4 inches taller and about a stone heavier. I think my pace got me away with a lot of things that helped me along that line. But, I think when I go back and I think in my early years being successful in the way that we were at Dundee United, for me, and the run we had when I was 20 years of age, and we talk about young, but there's players nowadays that are they're making debuts and they're doing well at the age of 18 and then 17 just as they come out of school. So, 20 was young in those days, and to be with a squad of lads at United like I was with was fantastic because they helped you develop as much as they could. They gave you a stick to kind of mature you. And then, of course, you had wee Jim with the iron rod to keep you a level pegging. So, it was a fantastic upbringing and one that I thought, well, by the time I reached 24 years of age, got married, and I thought World Cup 90, I thought this is it. And Andy Roxburgh left me out the squad. And I just thought, well, that's my chance for the national team gone. And I thought that would be all over.
It was strange. I mean, we're talking now, Stephen mentioned Kevin Ben Doak and Billy Gilmour. We talk about, young players, but when you came through, you made your debut for Scotland in 88 as a young man, 7 days after you'd scored in the Scottish Cup final, and a year after you'd been involved in that United squad that got all the way to a European final. So you actually, as a young man, had far more experience than a lot of today's young players have at the same age.
Oh, definitely. And I noticed that down here in England, Roger, as well, that people only see my career as being down here, started at basically Blackburn. They forget the career I had in Scotland, and that's the kind of downside down here. But then, it was just fantastic for me to be brought up with that squad of guys, as I said. And you go out, you do the best you can. And Jim McLean was true to his word. He said, if you're good enough for my team, you'll play. And fortunate for me, Ralph Millen got an injury and he stopped me in as a right winger. He obviously thought that was going to be my position for the future, but he's seen something in me that kind of merited between Ralph Millen and maybe Paul Sturrock, because that was the two guys that he actually got me to watch when I was 17 and said, you will keep an eye on these two guys because that's the kind of player that you could be. And it's kind of weird because I was centre midfielder as a kid and signed at Dundee United as a centre midfielder. But obviously my size was going to let me down in that position. And I think eventually becoming the more as an inside forward was somewhere that I didn't fall upon because I scored goals for fun. It was just the fact is that the manager wanted me to develop in different positions and understand the game of football better.
It's funny, you mentioned Paul Sturrock. He had to wait to get to a major tournament. I think, you know, he went to Mexico 86 under Alec Ferguson. You spoke there about your disappointment at Italia 90 when Andy Roxburgh didn't pick you. What was the elation like a couple of years later when Andy saw the error of his ways and added you to the squad to go to the Euros?
It was kind of weird because when you're not in the squad initially, like you kind of thought, right, that's it, my summer holiday is ready. You know, we booked a caravan site in Pitlochry. That was where we're going to go on our holidays and up there. And unfortunately, my wife went on her own because I got called into the squad and the next thing I know, I was at the Euros and then in Sweden, and I just thought, wow, it was a whirlwind for me to go there, knowing that you've got Germany, Holland, and Russia, or CIS at the time, as it changed the name. And for me, it was just unbelievable. And I took it that basically I was a hamper carrier. I was going there just to help carry players' boots and just back everybody up.
In terms of the two differing calls that you would have got, I'm guessing it was Andy Roxburgh who phoned you before Italia 90 to say, I'm sorry, Kev, you've not made the squad. And I'm guessing it was him again who gave you the good call before Euro 92. Talk us through those two phone calls that you would have got, because I think people are interested in how this works. And, you know, obviously on a human level, you must have been absolutely devastated in 1990 and then elated, as Roger said, in 1992.
Yeah, in 90 I was disappointed. We went down to one of these shows in Newcastle at the time. And I think Mo Johnson got an injury. And I got the phone call on the tannoy in this park in Newcastle with Kevin Gallagher, please come to the information desk. And I'm thinking, well, that's me. Who knows I'm here? How did they get a hold of me or whatever? And I went to the phone and it was Andy. And he said to me, he says, Mo's got a wee ankle injury. You're going to be on standby for the World Cup. And I thought, damn, that spoilt my holiday. So I thought to get myself ready. So it was a bit of a shock because, I mean, I had everything planned for the holidays, but wee Mo didn't actually spoil it because he passed his sail fit and I didn't get, which was disappointing. But at the end of the day, when 92 came along, you're hoping to get that illustrious call again and you never know. You know, you're older, you're wiser. All that stuck in the back of my head was Andy Roxburgh's words of saying, Kevin, you need to play first-team football to get involved in the squad. But I knew that was a lie because I was playing first-team football from January to the end of the season and I never got in that 90 World Cup squad. So I thought, well, should I bother? Should I really be interested? Yes, it would be great for me to get to that level and be with the guys. I've played against them week in, week out. And just to go and play alongside them because they're the best in your country. And that's what I wanted to do. And when you get that call, it's elation, it's nervousness. And it's like, wow, I'm actually there now. It's just how do I stay there?
You know, we always hear about players talking about their managers and coaches that they've worked with. And I think all of them probably just want managers and coaches to be straight with them. It sounds like you think that Andy Roxburgh wasn't being straight with you there at all.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things. At the time when you're young, you're a little bit more naive and you kind of, when you see the squad list comes out, it's all over the nationals and your name's not on it, you don't get a phone call to tell you why you're not on it. You kind of think, okay, I'm not good enough. You look at the squad of players that went and you think, oh, well, I mean, that's just a shame because there's quality in there and I'll cheer the boys on. I'll sit and support them and go along that avenue, and that's what I had to do. So it's just one of those things. Sometimes it's gut-wrenching to take it that way. And unfortunately, it's a time that I thought I was doing well. I kind of had a little fallout with Jim McLean. I got married in the summer. And Andy said to me, he just said, Kevin, you need to be playing first team football to have a chance. And to be fair, I moved to Coventry City in the January, played every game, played every cup match that they had available. And I played every B international that was available. I played every friendly that Scotland had. I turned up to everyone. And when the just when he named that squad, I wasn't in it. And that was the hardest part to take.
You mentioned earlier on about obviously who we were drawn against at Euro 92. Obviously a nice easy group. Germany, who were the World Cup holders. Netherlands, who were the European champions at the time. And Russia, of course. I mean, when you're lining up against literally some of the greats of the game, it must have been surreal for you to line up against these players and think, oh, right, I mean, how are we going to cope with these for the next 90 minutes?
I was just pinching myself, you know. It was kind of easy for me because when they named the first game against Germany, you're there and you're not playing, and you're not playing against Holland either, and you kind of think, right, well, I'm back up, and then you get on. It's like surreal because you have to have all the information that's gone out to these players, which we take in and absorb it, and then go out and then try and put in a performance to get a result back. And that's what I had to do in the first two matches, you know. And I thought, well, you go out, it's a Dutch side and a German side, they both won this competition. They're massive. You watch them on the TV, you watch these world superstars, you know, the Hulets, Van Bastens, you know, and you got the Caroline Riedlers and at the centre forward for Germany. And you got all these guys and you're thinking, oh, wow, I've watched them on the telly quite a lot. The quality players. And it's just nice to be on the pitch with them. But it would have been nice to go on and done a little bit of damage against them. But unfortunately, coming off the bench, it's quite difficult at times. And it, especially at this level, as I found out, you need two or three chances in club level to score a goal. You only get one chance at international level and you've got to take it. And that's the biggest step up that you've got to take in football.
You kept all the damage to that last game against the CIS, a historic first win at a Euros for a Scotland team, still to this day, our biggest win at a Euros. What was that day like? What was that game like?
It was relaxed. It was kind of weird because everybody knew there was going to be changes, but we didn't know how many changes, how he was going to change it. And we were on basically a height to nothing. We didn't want to finish bottom of the group. We needed goals. And we just hoping things would click, and it seemed to do it. They were a fantastic side, full of top international football players around Europe. And everybody was thinking, oh, this will be easy for Scotland, as we always do. But we took this more seriously, just like we did with the Holland and the Germany game. And we thought, well, if we can put in a performance, we can stop the CIS from going through, and we won't finish at the bottom. So it was just a case of try and get a victory. And we took out and get three goals against them was phenomenal, you know. And be part of the first two and be part of the starting lineup was fantastic for me. And, you know, just a shame he didn't start me the first two. We might have won them as well.
We spoke to Stuart McCall on an earlier podcast that we did, and he was saying that the Russians were extremely confident in winning that game, so confident that they had champagne on their bus for their journey home as well.
Yeah, they did. And the thing as well was one or two of them played with the Rangers lads. So basically they were filling them with all the information. And their lads were laughing up, Coisty and Paulie. Like, they were just like, you know, as they were, just being the typical jokers in the camp and making everybody relaxed as they were doing and telling you this is what they're saying, this is what they're doing, and they're going to come out and kick our butt. And we've got champagne in the bus to celebrate qualifying because we're going to beat you.
I mean, just absolutely. It's great to go out and get such a win over a team like that, and especially when they think they're going to win as well. I mean, there's nothing better than that. I'm just looking down who you had to compete against there, though. You mentioned Ali McCoy's, Gordon Jury was there, Big Dunk, Brian McClair was obviously in and around the squad. There was some major competition for those forward jerseys at that time, Kevin.
Well, there certainly was. And I mean, that's why I think, deep down in my stomach, that I wasn't so kind of worried, because I knew I was, if anything, you're a backup player and the guys that are playing phenomenal, Brian McClair, Man United, Motherwell, Celtic, you know, unbelievable footballer, like, and you're thinking, like, you don't think of yourself as a match or better than these players. You kind of you want to go along, and if you get an opportunity, you want to try and take it. And I mean, against CIS, I got the opportunity. I didn't score a goal, but at least you're in a winning side that, that left on a big high, and the celebrations after it from the Scotland fans were phenomenal. You know, it was a week's holiday for them every time we seemed to go away, and they enjoyed it. And just to repay the faith of the Tartan Army with a victory, I think, was the most important thing that we had to do for them.
On you go, Roger.
No, as you can see, Andy Roxburgh, of course, left after the next World Cup qualifying campaign. We didn't get to the United States. Craig then took over the role. Did you feel that was the real start, if you like, or a restart to your international career? Because so many of your highlights seem to come under Craig Brown.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of them come under Craig. You know, Craig is the 21s manager, and, you know, he had a lot of faith in what my ability was and what I could do. And, you know, it was brilliant in the way that what he wanted to do at the national team and put it into a big club feel, even more so than what Andy did. So that side of it seemed to suit myself better. But, you know, I had 2 years out the international set up after Euro 92, and I snapped my leg in February 94. So we didn't qualify for anything. So I thought, well, it's not so bad. I thought I'd be back, 6 or 7 weeks with the broken leg. It was 6 or 7 months later, and I was still chomping at the bit, thinking, like, I might never play again here. I don't know what's going to happen. And then I got myself back into the kind of 95-96 period, and started for Blackburn in a game, and then I ruptured my hamstring, which sent me out till the Christmas period. So I had 6 months, realistically, to prove that I was going to get back at international level for Scotland. And that was a difficult side for it. Had I got myself fit enough for this time, and that was a period. And I did that. I went on for Blackburn, and I played something like, I don't know, 15 games or something. Only got a couple of goals, but I was playing in various positions to get fitness. And to be fair and honest, I didn't think I would get to Euro 96. I was desperate because it was in England. And I was trying everything to get there, extra training session, extra gym sessions, doing everything to get myself fit. And it all paid off. You know, the hard work that I'd done with the 2 years of the broken legs. And eventually it paid off. And I think what happened with Craig taking me to that Euro 96, it gave me a self-belief that I could get back to the highest level again. And not doubt myself anymore. And that's what happened. And the next 2 seasons after that Euro campaign were probably my best period, I think. But I played 70-80 games that season and got about, I don't know, 30-odd goals, 40, nearly 40 goals that season, or the 2 seasons. So for me, I just came back stronger. And it was just due to the fact that Craig had the belief that I could get back to international level and took me in that Euro 96 squad.
You mentioned, obviously, it was so important to qualify for those Euros because they were in England. I think that was weighing on everyone's minds. You know, we got there fairly comfortably in the end, but we get there and obviously we're playing England. You had many, many colleagues at Blackburn at that time. Obviously, I think Shearer had just moved on by that stage, but, you know, you played with him. There was Tim Flowers was in the squad as well. I'm not sure if Tim Sherwood was floating in and out the squad. And then, obviously, there's yourself. There was Colin Hendry at Blackburn. So that's all a wee bit extra incentive as well. What was the chat like in the dressing room at Blackburn at that point?
It was mental, you know, between David Batty. He was a wind-up merchant anyway. And I spent 6 months in rehab with my first broken leg with David Batty, and got a good rapport with him, and we're just winding each other up, you know, texting, Shearer texting Big Colin Hendry, you know, just winding him up, saying, "Big man, I'm going to have you in my pocket." So it just all sorts was flying about. Just the banter was, some of it is true, probably too crude to actually repeat at times as well, but it was just one of them. We had to keep it below Craig. I don't think he would have took too well to it had he known that we were texting each other back and forward, England camp, Scotland camp, and having a little bit of banter. But it all came out well and fair in the end, up when we all met up after all.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, as I said, we spoke to Stuart McCall, and he said, you know, before a match, he wasn't interested in sort of, you know, going and speaking to anyone. He was just sort of like focused. But there was other boys in the squad who, you know, met former colleagues and colleagues that used to play away, played with that. So were you one of these people who would go and chat to, you know, like Alan Shearer before a game or whatever, something like that?
Yeah, we did. You know, I think I'd done something for TV. I think I did a chat with David Batty, I think it was. We'd done a chat and we were just holding out and having a general Q&A and having a bit of banter. But it was, you could tell when you see the interview, I think none of us were having it. I was obviously vying for the Scotland side of things. He was vying the England side of things. And you could tell the bitter rivalry between us, even though we were teammates and you have a bit of a laugh. You could tell there that the deep down, as soon as we crossed that white line, we'd be kicking each other as what happened.
The 0-0 game against Holland, obviously you took part in. It was a 0-0 draw, which we specialise in Scotland here. A great save on the line from John Collins as well. But again, that was another fantastic Holland team that we had to go up against.
Oh, I mean, Hewlett, Van Basten, Neil Rijkaard, you know, Cummins, you look at them, Van Thielen, you look at all the names of these guys, they were all European superstars. It was a phenomenal team. And I think we had a guy, Richard Vichka, who'd played, well, he turned up for one match for Blackburn when we won the league. And Richard, and I think Craig Brown thought, well, you can play against a teammate. You know what he's like. And I think Craig underestimated how good Richard actually was for the Dutch national setup. And he kind of wanted me to go more as a wide and play against this 3-5-2 or 3-4-3 system that Holland had. And it kind of worked out a little bit, but I knew when I played in that game that I was nowhere near to the speed, to the reaction of being back and ready to actually play. And it was kind of disappointing. It kind of disappointing for me, the performance that I put in for the standard that I kind of like to have set myself. And I think I got subbed in the second half. And then that was it, basically. That was the end of my campaign. I was back on the bench again and backing the lads up. But it gave me that little bit of a carrot to go to the next level.
And there was disappointment again that we didn't quite get a place in the history books. We couldn't, you know, that team wasn't the first team to get through a group stage at a major finals. That last night against the Swiss, what was it like watching from the side? Is, you know, at one stage we were through, then the Dutch scored at Wembley and we weren't through, and ultimately we didn't make it again.
It was really weird, Roger, you know, because when you're sat on the bench and you're getting information, it's getting filtered across from different people and who got it on a transistor radio or the TV in the background or whatever. And it was kind of weird because the funniest part was, I mean, Coisty scored an unbelievable goal and we were thinking, that's it. And then we heard England have gone 4-0 up. And we were like, well, we've qualified. This could be the time. This is as we're qualified, really. And Craig Brown has got up and Craig just shouted on, guys, calm down, calm down, calm down. We're qualified. Came back to the bench and he went back out again. Guys, get forward. We need to score. Hey, Holland have scored. We need to score now. Get forward. Like, it was just, and us is, well, you shouldn't laugh at the manager, but we couldn't stop laughing just for that circumstance of what Craig done. And I thought, oh, we just shouldn't have mentioned it in the first place. But it was one of them. And it's typical when England let you down for qualifying for the next round, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you're speaking with a lot of affection for Craig Brown. That's what I've picked up over the last sort of 10, 15 minutes. But, you know, obviously he's sadly no longer with us. He seemed like someone who just got everyone on side. That's what I'm picking up here.
Yeah, he did. You know, and as I said, I'd been with him at under 21s and he was that kind of fatherly figure there. And helped you develop as a young lad, assistant with Andy, and he kind of helped bring you into that squad as well. Then when he took over, you know, he wanted to do it his way, not Andy's way, and changed it a little bit further, made it really, really more like a club side rather than an international side. And he took it that way. And that's, I think, why everybody grasped that. I would say, well, 90%, grasped at it. There's one or two players didn't feel like they were welcome to it, but everybody else got on and the way it happened, and he had to shuffle players around, as you always do as a national manager. And as I said, we all speak very, very highly of Craig, because he treated us like adults, as we did with him. And when you're playing as well, you have the utmost respect for his tactical ability, the knowledge he had in the opposition, how he done it with the opposition, and what you looked at to prepare against the opposition. Like, it was like, wow, it was surreal, that all the work that he'd done. And he just wasn't winging it. He was grafting his socks off for it, and the players bought into it.
And Craig, up until the last Euros, Craig, of course, had been the last Scotland manager to take a national team to a major finals, Kevin. No one was happier than him when Steve Clarke took that record at Euro 2020. Take us back. You were an attacking player in the English top flight. Steve Clarke was a defender in the English top flight. Did you have a few running battles with him in your day?
I did. I had a running battles at St Mirren when he was at St Mirren. And then when he went to Chelsea, obviously, you know what it was like. And he either played centre-half or he went to right-back on the odd occasion. And Clarke, he got on with it. He was one of those guys that he gets 7 out of 10 every game. You know, he'd go out and he would give his best, what he could do. And his knowledge was phenomenal. And I found that out after he retired and he became a football coach, you know. And I went to Newcastle at the end of my career. And that's when you get to know people, because you started doing coaching licenses and things, and you're going on to your coaching badges. And I was starting to take them and understand a little bit. And we played Sheffield United and I got man-marked. I'd never been man-marked in my whole career, ever at all. But Neil Warnock got, obviously showing me respect, got a guy marked four to man-mark me against Sheffield United in the Cup. And first 45 minutes, everywhere I went, even if when I went to the toilet, I turned around, the guy was right behind me and I couldn't shake him off. And I came in at half-time and Clarke pulled me and he just went, why don't you go and stand still in the left wing for 5 minutes and see what he does then? And that little teeny tiny bit of information just helped me. Within 5 minutes, I scored a goal. So the knowledge he had and what he could see in football, you know, and the aftermath of it was phenomenal. So I knew then that he could go on to become a great coach. Managing, I didn't know, but with the international setup, I think he's doing a fantastic job.
And you see, in your work now, I know you do a lot of media work still in the north of England, you follow Blackburn a lot, you will see a lot of the Scotland squad. I think the provisional squad that Steve's picked, there's about 9 players who play in the English Championship. It's still a good level, isn't it? It's still a level that can prepare some of these lads to go and play international football, Kevin.
Definitely. You know, and people, everybody talks about the English Premier League and things, but the Championship is what I class as a real English game again, you know. The Premier League, everybody plays the same style. They all want to play like Manchester City and Pep Guardiola's style. Not everybody can do that, because not everybody has the pace all the way throughout the team. But in the Championship, everybody is different. You get your long balls, you get your ones that take out the back, you get your ones that play football, get your ones that don't. And you know, it's a difficult league. It's a tough league because you don't have VAR to second check everything, and it's still the same way as what football was back when I played. And you know, I think VAR's changing the top level of football, and I think everybody's getting very frustrated with the state of it. And the Championship, you know, I watch it every single week, and they follow teams in it, and you follow the Scottish lads, and you know, they're holding their own on it. I would probably say about 6 or 7 years ago, there's a lot of the Scottish lads couldn't handle the Championship because it was so difficult, and they disappeared. They went back to Scotland, or they've gone somewhere else to try and resurrect their football career.
Yeah, in terms of the squad as a whole that Steve Clarke has picked for the Euros, you know, obviously there's disappointment, the likes of Lewis Ferguson missing out with injury, Aaron Hickey, Nathan Patterson, but it's still a really strong squad. And is it realistic to expect, or not expect, but hope that Scotland will get through out of this group, even though it is a tough group as well?
No, it's a tough group on paper, there's no doubt about it. But I think this is probably our best chance. You know, I think the group of guys we've got on the offensive, we can certainly score goals. Yeah, we can lose goals as well. But sometimes if you can get it together, this for me is a section that I think they can qualify for. And, you know, it's never say never for this, because when you play in Germany in that opening game of the World Cup, or opening game of the Euro, I should say, that's the best time to probably get a German team, because you can catch them cold. And hopefully that's what you do. You know, we nearly caught Brazil in opening game of the 98 World Cup. We nearly caught them cold when everybody had written us off. Okay, we did eventually get beat. But when you get them in the first game, that you can get a result. And I'm just, fingers crossed, that this can be the time that we can get the results. But Hungary and Switzerland, they're probably on par with us. And I just think we could get a result if we can get our first 11 out there.
Are you getting over to Germany, Kevin?
I'm not. No, I'm not going to get there. I went over to the World Cup in 2006. I absolutely loved Germany. I thought it was so well organised and everything that ran in that World Cup. So I'm absolutely jealous of everybody that's going over to this one, because I know how well that they have run a World Cup, and the Euros, I'm sure, will be run just as much.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Listen, Kev, we're going to wrap up in just a wee second with a few quiz questions. So we'll explain that in just a wee second. But I've got some quick fire questions for you as well. Who was your roommate when you were at Scotland, your regular roommate?
Try to think which ones were which now. Because I had Brian Gunn at one,
mm-hmm.
Colin Hendry at the World Cup, and...
Did you get to pick them?
No, I don't think I did.
Did you not?
At the start, I didn't. I know for Euro 92, I didn't get to pick it.
Right.
I think I just got put, but I'm trying to think who. I can't even remember who it was.
And were they all right? Were they acceptable roommates, Brian Gunn, Colin Hendry? Nay, sort of shenanigans?
Oh, yes. Oh, no, no shenanigans. Like, we never seen Colin Hendry because obviously he was a skipper, so he was always in Craig's room. The tactics were floating the rest of us, so. On that side of it, no. When we done the Euros, I think Euro 96 was Brian Gunn. Derek White. I think I was in the Big Whitey for one of them.
Who was the teacher's pet?
Teacher's pet. I think it was Coisty. Coisty was always teacher's pet.
Okay, fair enough. We've had a few different answers for that one, to be fair. Again, we've asked a couple of the boys from Euro 2020 about who picked the tunes in the dressing room. Was that a thing when you were in the dressing room? Did you have a boombox? How did it work?
We had one of those gramophones, I think. They were.
Who was the best singer of the national anthem?
I don't know, but we mimed it quite a bit, some of the boys.
You mind it?
Yeah, well, Craig Brown's philosophy, if you do not know the words of a national anthem, just mime it. Because it looks good on the telly.
Yep. Well, there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, I didn't actually realise this until we started recording these podcasts, that Scotland the Brave was the national anthem. We used it like Euro 92 and stuff like that. I mean, I could barely tell you the words to Scotland the Brave, so no wonder you were miming it. Who was the moaniest player in the squad, Kev?
The goalie liked to moan.
Mm-hmm. All right, good.
The goalie did.
Who did you manage to get a shirt from when you're swapping shirts? Who's your proudest one that you managed to get?
You know what? What I normally do is I normally have a little party in my garden, and I'll do it again for the Euros, and I'll get the Pickford's box out and I'll dig the shirts out. And there was one shirt that I thought was all right. It was Victor Anopto for the CIS.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a guy came over and he wanted that shirt badly. And I didn't understand it, but because CIS, it's a one-off year that they played apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And that shirt, he said, is just phenomenal for that time. And I just thought, all right. And I'm glad I kept it. I'm glad I swapped it. And it was Victor Anopko, the central defender. I think Germany, I got Sammer.
That's decent.
Sammer.
Yeah.
But I think I got Van Tegelen for Holland.
Mm-hmm.
Euro 96, I got Stuart Pearce. Who did I get for Holland? I can't remember who I got for Holland. It'll come back to me soon. And Switzerland, I can't remember the names. Yeah. I must be honest with that.
Hey, listen, you've done well there. That's very good, Matthias Sammer. Was he not one European Football Player of the Year, I think, in the mid-90s? That's not bad at all. Who was your toughest opponent for Scotland?
Toughest ever opponent I came across was Franco Baresi. I felt like I was watching a match. I was up front with Morris Johnson in a place called, I think it was Perugia. Yep. It's amazing how memories like this flood back to you. And I felt like I was watching a central defender take the mickey out of centre forwards for the first time ever. And I just remember this one thing, and wee Mo was brilliant at it, getting the ball, using his backside, spinning the defenders. And this guy, Franco Baresi, this older guy, and he was leading this back line, and we didn't know whether we were going to be offside, onside, with the dog back, run forward. He was just pillar to post with us. And then all of a sudden, he took the ball off Mo. And I thought, right, this is it. Right, get in a position just in case we get the ball in midfield or something and we can go on a counter-attack, bit of pace over the top. And no, he plays a 1-2, he gets down the line, he has a dribble, a step over, gets down the right-hand side and puts a cross in. And Viale nearly scored from it. And I thought, oh my God, who is this guy? He was just unbelievable. And then when I watched him for Milan in the Champions League, and you just thought, I played against him, I can't believe it. And he was what a footballer he was, a brain. He could do anything, he could defend, he could attack, he had skills. A great footballer.
I heard he was quite good back in the day. I heard he was quite good. Finally, you've played for some big name managers. If you could only pick one, Jim McLean, Kenny Dalglish, or Craig Brown?
I think realistically, I mean, it's a tough one. Like, I don't like to single out one because they were all magnificent in their own way. But I think wee Jim, for me, believing in me and my size, and what I could do about my ability, and to give me that opportunity in a team that, when I joined, were Premier League champions in Scotland. So for me to join that group of guys and develop that way, I think that set me in good stead to go and work with the best managers like Craig Brown, like Kenny Dalglish, and understand the game better.
Yeah. Okay, that was a good answer. Right, Kev, just quickly before we go, we're going to do the Summer European Football Tournament quiz. And I don't know if you can see this on your screen. We've got a trophy here, right?
It's like my player of the year as a kid.
I think we got it for the same shop, I think.
Yeah.
So, listen, at the top of the leaderboard just now, as we record this, is Stuart McCall with 7, okay? So there's 60 seconds on the clock. You'll get through as many questions as you can. Obviously, if you don't know the answer, just pass or have a guess, whatever it is. 60 seconds on the clock. General knowledge Euro questions, okay? So it's nothing hard. You'll know the answer to these questions, okay?
Yeah.
Right, are you ready?
Yep, ready.
Your time begins now. Who won the Golden Boot at Euro 96?
Klinsmann.
Shearer. How many points did we end up on at Euro 92?
Euro 92, we ended up on two points for a win back then.
Which team were the runners-up at Euro 96?
Euro 96, runners-up, the winners... Italy.
At what stadium did Scotland play their games against Holland and Switzerland at Euro 96?
Villa Park.
Who were Scotland's first opponents at Euro 2020?
Oh, God.
How many teams were at Euro 92?
Holland, Germany, CIS.
Kev. Come on.
There's a lot of pressure in this.
You know, quizzes are harder when you're under pressure. They are harder when you're under pressure, as Kevin has just rightly showed there. So, listen, we'll go through the answers. You got there eventually. Who won the Golden Boot? Euro 96, you said Klinsmann, but then you corrected it to Shearer, so we'll give you that one. Well done. How many points did we end up on at Euro 92? A trick question from producer John there.
2 points.
2 points. He didn't fall for it. Answer. Well done. Two. Which team were the runners-up at Euro 96? You said Italy. It was Czech Republic. They go beat by Germany in the final. Oliver Bierhoff with a goal. Villa Park, you got that, so that's you up to three. Who were Scotland's first opponents at Euro 2020? It was Czech Republic again.
I know.
And how many teams were at Euro 92? I'll give you a second chance to get this answer.
28.
There was only 8 teams at Euro 92. There was two groups of 4.
Oh, my God. See, that? See, I'm so up to date now. I'm way ahead of 92.
That's what it is. There should have been 28 teams. So what was that?
There should have been 28 teams. That's what it is now.
Exactly. That was a 3. And I've got some bad news, Kevin. That's you bottom of the table, unfortunately.
I've got good news, Kevin. You're not getting that trophy. That's good news.
Yeah, exactly. You won't get the coveted trophy now. So... You can rearrange your mantelpiece wherever you were thinking you were going to put it. So
that could hold up the mantelpiece.
Very true, very true. Kevin, thanks so much for being on the podcast with us. It's been a pleasure to chat to you, and I hope you enjoy your summer, whatever you get up to, your garden party. Hopefully you manage to punt a few more Russian shirts and all the rest of it in your back garden, and we'll hopefully speak to you soon, mate. All right.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, guys.
Brilliant, great, Kevin.
Enjoy it, because I'm going to enjoy it, and I'm going to enjoy the party as well.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm sure we all will. Thank you very much to Kevin Gallagher there for joining us on Scotland's Euro Stories with the Scottish Sun. So remember, you can stay ahead of the game with the Scottish Sun Sport online. Just head to thescottishsun.co.uk. And of course, you can check out Clyde One Super Scoreboard's YouTube channel, I should say, and all the podcast feed for some more of our episodes there. We'll see you next time. Roger, thank you very much.
Thanks, Stephen.
And we'll catch you next time for some more chat. Cheerio, bye.
Super Scoreboard presents Scotland's Euro Stories with the Scottish Sun.